Well, they haven't done it already, so they can't be hired for the job.
It wasn't just HP you did work for, but you also did work sort of for Steve for Atari, did you not?
Yeah, not exactly for Steve. What happened was I saw Pong in a bowling. I was so... There was a time in my life when I was so nerdy, I never had a chance to have a girlfriend or a wife. And I worked for Hewlett Packard. So I would do calculators in the daytime at Hewlett Packard. I'd go home at night, watch Star Trek, have a TV dinner, and then I'd work on my own electronics projects, one after another after another, just for myself. And believe it or not, the Apple II was the sixth time I'd built a project just for myself. And then Steve Jobs saw it and said, here's how we can make money off it. So the Apple, but what I would do with Pong, I actually saw it in a bowling alley. And then Steve came back from Oregon, where he'd been going to school. He saw my little Pong board, a little board with 28 chips on it, playing Pong on a TV set. He ran down to Atari with it to show them, like we had both designed it. And they hired him. But apparently, what I'm told by the Atari guys, Steve didn't, he was abrasive with people. And they put him on the night shift finally, where he worked only all alone, nobody else. But he came to me once. There was one time I didn't design it for myself. He came to me and said, "Oh, Nolan Bushnell at Atari wants this one-player Pong, and can you design it?" And I said, "Yeah, I'd love to design a game that kids are going to play would fulfill my heart. I love kids and all and games." And he said, "Well, you have to do it in 4 days." Games were hardware, not software. Hardware. This was 6 man-months project. I said, I could try. I was like the hottest designer in the world, but I don't think I can do it. 4 days and nights, no sleep. We both got the sleeping sickness, mononucleosis, delivered a working breakout to Atari.
Sweet.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah, so, and Steve, yeah, negotiated that deal. Right.
Tell us the first time you met Steve.
First time I met Steve was 1970. I back in high school, I had gotten to where I could design almost any computer in the world in 2 days. And now 1970 was, IBM 360 Model 40 was beauty to me. It was as beautiful as the iPhone 4 is today, to my eyes. And, what I did was I had a job between school years because I wanted to pay my own way to my third year of college.
Right.
And at that job, an executive said he could get me the chips for a computer of my design. He heard I designed computers. Oh man, I went home, designed my own computer up, he got the chips. Built it down, three houses down, I was building it at a friend's house, and the friend said, you know, you should meet this other guy from our high school, Steve Jobs, because he knows electronics well, and he likes pranks. He does pranks at school, and I was known for those two things. We met, we just hit it off. We were both into the same two things, and then we got into discussions of music and life and the importance of it. And you see, I was a little older than Steve, but I was going through that, you know, how do you work out, how do you live, how do you find keys to goodness in life and being a good person, and Steve was also. Searching. He was younger. He was more moldable.
Right.
Or more, not moldable, but flexible. So, and he was more like the true hippie, and I was sort of the admirer of people who think different, counterculture. You know?
Got it.
So, yeah.
Do you miss him?
I miss him greatly. And it grows on me. At first, it was just a shock. And, you know, but it wasn't unexpected. But it's when you think back to things you did with kids, you know, people you grew up with, you were in school with, you know, and unbelievable, you know, pranks we did together and discussions and some weird things and phoning the Pope.
Phoning the Pope. Okay.
I
confession. This story.
This one's about making a confession. I had discovered this intriguing thing called a blue box, and I thought it was fiction. Steve and I figured out how to make these blue boxes that would put tones, beep, 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 like touch tones, into any American phone and dial a call for free anywhere in the world. And oh my God, we stumbled into this and nobody knew about this thing. And to me, it was intriguing to actually build it and accomplish it and know about it and tell people about it. Steve came along and said, I know how we can sell this. That was our first company. We could sell it in the dorms, door to door. So we would go door to door in the dorms and we sold them, believe it or not. These illegal devices. Now, I have part of my life. By the way, part of my life philosophy was never to hide secrets from my parents. So I even told them what I was doing.
Yes.
I think they really appreciate the fact that you're telling them. They just said, don't make any of those calls from our house. You know, and if you're young, you get caught. Maybe you get a surprise slap. But, so we didn't get caught, and Steve and I sold them, and so when we were doing demos, in order to get them sold, call all sorts of hotels around the world and dial a joke lines in Sydney, Australia, and we'd do all these little fun things. I would, actually. I was the MC. So one time I got this idea, I'll call the Pope. I called the Pope, I said, I'm Henry Kissinger, I'm with Richard Nixon at the summit in Moscow, and we want to talk to the Pope. And they said, oh, it's 5:30 here in the morning, we'll have to wake him up. By 6:30 in the morning, I got to the bishop who was going to be the translator. I started using an accent like Henry Kissinger. And the bishop said, oh, well, he just talked to Henry Kissinger. The real Henry Kissinger.
So you never got to confess to the Pope?
Not quite.
What would you have said to him if you had gotten through?
You know, I didn't think that far ahead.
Wow, okay, I don't know where to go.
I would tell my, I have an uncle who's a Catholic priest.
Okay, yeah. You're going to put in a good word
for myself. Yeah, that's an idea.
The future of computing. We were talking about this last night. A deep one. Do you think the brain is computable?
I actually didn't think that my whole life, and then recently I've come to the conclusion that it is computable. And although we've taken steps that aren't complete in terms of things like Siri and Watson and understanding normal human things like voice, the internet has served as part of the brain. Because if you have a deep question, you now ask Google, not a person with a brain. So we didn't, but did we build the internet to be a brain, to be a wired brain? No, but we wound up with part of it by accident. Part of the brain. So I think we're going to stumble onto consciousness, and it might start with the internet, which has as many nodes as we have neurons in the brain, right. Order of magnitude.
Do you think Watson's a step along the way?
Watson's a great step, unbelievable. Yeah, to see that happen, and it's also great to talk into my phone like a normal human being. You know, I'd like a reservation for 6 at 8 p.m. Wednesday night at Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, and it doesn't.
Yeah.
And you know, or navigate to MGM Grand, and it doesn't.
Let's talk about education again, because I know you love teaching kids, and you have so many kids that you have inspired over the years. I sort of have this feeling that there's a digital generation that's been born that doesn't understand much at all about computing. What do we need to say to that generation? How do we empower them?
There are, of course, some specialty schools that deal with just technology and education, mathematics, that sort of stuff. And they go a long ways, but it's not like in the masses. The problem is, normal schools, what is a teacher gonna teach? They're only gonna teach what they know, what they were taught. So the course you get, I'm thinking way down to elementary school. Because you know what, by the time you're in third grade, 8 years old, you've decided whether education's important or not, and the teachers can see which students have dropped out.
Yeah.
One's doing poorly in third, don't do better in fourth, they don't come back in fifth. You know, it's sort of like they've made a decision.
Yeah.
And that's part of the education structure is you learn the same pages in the book every day as all the other students in your class, and then you get testing. And you know what, that testing, Johnny's good, I'm not gonna try. You get too much of that, and you get, so in the public schools is what I'm talking about,
right?
Yeah, it's very difficult. But I always thought that once computers were so important, the most important academic tool of our life is in the early days of personal computers even, they're going to teach programming, they're going to teach computers in school, how they work, and they never did. They taught, here's how you type. Well, it's just a different typing machine.
Yeah.
So, and that's called computer literacy. And when I taught my classes how to use your computer to make every assignment in school look good, be presented well, and solved well, that was 200 hours a year, even for fifth graders. It's a deep, deep course. So they give a student, you know, a few hours, and they call it computer literacy, and I said, well, that's not really understanding what's going on in the computer, what is RAM, what is hard disk, how are they used, how are they storing things, what are ones and zeros. So I'm disappointed that the world didn't get more into that. We learned a lot of mathematics you'll never use in life, but boy, the logic of computer science, programming, knowing how to write a program to solve your own problems. I like to use puzzles. You can see puzzles in the newspaper, you can go to the store and buy little kits of puzzles. You can write a program for every one of those. It's a beautiful, wonderful thing to do in life. And kids love doing that. And there's nothing in programming, or even actually computer design, except for some few little analog stuff, that is beyond fifth grade mathematics. So, and young kids, yeah, love to learn it, but we're just not giving it to them. We're saying, here are the things you learn in life and that are important. And very few find an accidentally. They accidentally stumble down a path of discovering they're great at computers and they're selling software by the time they're 10. Or 16.
Do you still program?
I don't program much anymore. I don't have the time, but actually once in a while I would.
Mm-hmm.
I would. But probably in simpler languages like AppleScript.
Right. Any regrets over the, if you look back over your career, anything you would have done different other than maybe not call the poker?
Well, no regrets at all. I come up with one of these lives where you don't want to go back and look and say, what if we had done this? What if we had licensed the Bankatosh operating system? You don't want to look at that because you don't really have the answer.
Right.
You don't know the answer. Even Steve Jobs would tell me he doesn't know if we should have or shouldn't have. But maybe we should have, but that's not a regret.
Right.
So I just don't want to live a life of regrets.
Right. Right.
And there was one little tiny regret, which was when I was writing my basic, I wrote out the entire syntax of the entire basic language from a Hewlett-Packard basic manual. I had never programmed in basic. I didn't know the language. I had to write it and learn it, and then I had to write a program that did it. But in doing that, I wrote it all out, and then I thought, oh my gosh, if I will get famous like Bill Gates, if I'm the first one to write a basic for the 6502 microprocessor, people in all these little clubs will know my name. So what I did was I stripped out the floating point part of it, numbers with decimal points. I stripped that out so I could get done quicker because I was a mathematician who used integers to even calculate sines and cosines on our HP calculators and things. And that's all you need for games, and it's more directed, it's faster. I stripped it out to save 1 month in writing the language. And we never, and even though I wrote the floating point routines, wrote an article on it in a magazine, put it in the ROM on the Apple II, it wasn't in the basic. And so a little while later, Microsoft popped in the door, Bill Gates himself, and said, well, we have a basic with floating points that will run on your machine. And I adapted it with some graphics routines and all that stuff and some disk routines, and sure enough, it worked. And so we licensed it. Now, 5 years later, all of the revenues of our company, Apple, were coming from the Apple II, and the license expired. So they kind of had us, where they wanted us for other little privileges, like GUI operating systems and stuff.
Last question.
Yeah.
Tell me something you must do before you die.
I only have two things, really, that I come to my mind right now on my bucket list, to see Ayers Rock and Tasmania. I don't know why I only have
And to see William
Shatner. Well, that's not on my list, really. But and to get $750,000 on Game Boy Tetris, the original Game Boy Tetris.
How close are you? How close have you got?
I had $702,000 a long time ago. I think I might make it.
Let me bring out Scott. I think you've got some Twitter questions from the crowd. Scott, where are you?
There you are.
Come join us.
Hey, guys. Feel a little overdressed here, so hold on.
I'm just going to read it.
Yeah. All right, so we got a bunch of questions people have been asking Waz on Twitter.
Okay.
So we got them here, but the first one actually comes from Rebecca.